The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Let's go! One on three! One, two, three!
You're listening to the best of the Dolphins.
Well, y'all boys, man. Keep your hands up to 1-2.
A weekly mix of AM 560 Sports, WQAM's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Of course, there's a little celebration going on today because Tua is that dude. And I've been saying it for a minute, and you're just going to let it wash all over you if you're a Tua hater like Solana. You got to let it wash all over you because he's that dude.
Hawk, the young kids say he's him or Himothy.
He is him.
He played very well. To tell you that, he played well. Sauce Gardner wasn't playing, but he played well.
Here's some stats. Here's some tweets. From football perspective, Tua Tagovailoa at 74.5% has the best completion percentage in the NFL this season. Tua Tagovailoa at 69%.
Nice.
Has the best completion percentage of any quarterback over the last 3 years. From Joe Shad in the Palm Beach Post, Tua Tagovailoa has completed 70% or better in his last seven games. Only one player has ever had eight consecutive games in a season with over 70% or better. That is Joe Montana. Pretty good quarterback, if you remember him.
He can play ball.
Kurt Warner tweeted out last night, if you don't think Tua has elite, and he capitalized elite. If you don't think Tua has elite anticipation, timing, and accuracy, you cray-cray. And yes, that was what Kurt Warner tweeted in 2024. You cray-cray.
Kurt been around the jitterbugs too much. He's hanging out with the children.
Since returning from the concussion, Tua has 15 touchdowns, one interception, almost 2,000 yards passing, a 112.5 passer rating, as one tweeter tweets, get a decent team around this man.
The Jets were loading up to stop the run as he went for 250, and then he went for 300. And they were just, I was like, they're going to stay in this game plan? Because Tua eats you up. If you have timing routes and one-on-ones, Tua's going to put that ball where it's supposed to be.
Which is exactly what you saw in overtime, by the way. I mean, just timing route. I mean, just we've been on the opposite end of what happened to the Jets in overtime a zillion times where someone, and it doesn't even have to be a great quarterback. Like, it can be someone who's just a great quarterback against the Miami Dolphins, but someone with just pinpoint accuracy, pop, 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 pop. Overtime's over before you even knew it began because it was so precision. And that's exactly what Tua did yesterday to the Jets. And it was just, now listen, you can argue all you want whether the game should have ever been that close or should have even gone to overtime against a stinky Jets team that was missing Sauce Gardner. But regardless, they needed a dub. They got out of there with the dub. And when you needed him to drive downfield to tie it up, he did that. And when you needed him to drive downfield and seal the deal with a touchdown so that Aaron Rodgers didn't get a chance because you only settled for three, which every Dolphins fan had to be thinking is exactly what's going to happen. Jonnu. Oh, my God, what happened? Alec Ingold up the middle three times. Let's kick a field goal and hope the defense can hold him. And it was they scored the tutty, and it was just like it was great. I mean, it was just a great ending.
I like that. When it was on the line, I don't say on the line. In the second half, Mike McDaniel kind of said, the hell with this running game. give two of the ball. Like, let's just go down there and throw the rock. I love that he's not like, oh, like I said about the Jets defense, setting my ways of what I want to know. Tua's cooking, let him cook. I love that. I don't need an answer because I know y'all had the same feeling. When they went to overtime, it was a loss in my mind. I'm glad I was wrong. Even when they got the flip and they get the ball first, okay, we kick a field goal, they score a touchdown. Yep, that's about it. I had no confidence in that being a win. I'm glad it came out on that side. We're still in the hunt category. I was watching last night the game. We're still in the hunt little category, and I enjoy it.
The percentage, I think, is up over 20% now that the Dolphins will make the postseason. And I have to tell you something. You jumped all over me when I said maybe one day we'll say Tua is the best quarterback in Dolphins history. Not saying that, but Tua Tagovailoa should get MVP votes if the Dolphins make the playoffs, even having missed four games.
He plays 13. He's over 74%. He can go to the Pro Bowl. He can go to the Pro Bowl.
For sure.
But MVP.
But he should get MVP votes.
Josh Allen accounted for six touchdowns yesterday.
Josh Allen's the best player in the league by far. I saw who said that today. It was on, I think it was Rex Ryan said that today on Get Up. Like, by far, the best player in the National Football League is Josh Allen.
He threw a touchdown to himself 2 weeks ago and then scored six touchdowns yesterday, Hawk. Like, can Tua get a vote or two? Maybe. Can he go to the Pro Bowl? Yes. Josh Allen has that trophy. There's no reason for anybody else to go to the ceremony.
Tua deserves it. If the award went to who is literally the, or at least should be in the conversation, who is literally the most valuable player for their team?
For their team.
Aside from records.
We've seen it. This team is literally garbage if he's not out there playing quarterback. Now, I don't know what the situation would be in Buffalo. Who is the – I know Mike White's third, but who's the second string?
Well, that answers your question at what the situation would look like. But right. But I think we've also seen instances where, you know, Jordan Love went down, but the Packers Foundation and LaFleur, like, they're going to be able to at least maximize the situation and not make it look miserable. We've seen it and what it looks like with the Dolphins. Misery. And with Tua playing, he is without a doubt – the most valuable player, one of them, in the NFL for their team.
Well, Mitchell Trubisky's back up in Buffalo. He's not scoring six touchdowns in a game.
No.
But he's not going to look like Skylar Thompson.
You're right. And then Josh Johnson backs up Lamar Jackson, but they have a hell of a run game, so they just lean on Derrick Henry. No, I'm with you. Tua, and that's the thing. Is it most outstanding player or most valuable player? Because value to the Dolphins – Tua is up. He's probably number one in the league.
He adds $1 billion in net worth to that franchise for Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross should walk around Tua with a pillow.
I haven't missed a home game all year. It's ugly when Tua's not playing.
Nobody have a yelling, chance.
Let's go Boyle.
Tua, he finishes the game. First Dolphins since Dan Marino. Three straight 300 games. 33 of 47, 331 yards, two touchdowns, including a game winner to Jonnu Smith. This was Tua after the game on why all of a sudden it was the Jonnu show in overtime.
I think he came. I think Jonnu came up to Mike and had to have said something to Mike to get him more included, maybe. And that's what ended up happening. And it's super cool because throughout the game, he never said anything. When he got targeted once, it wasn't a drop. It was like that was on me. And so after that, like, you know, not seeing the ball, that can get this, you know, that can be discouraging. But You know, he never blinked, and we gave him opportunities off that first screen. Like, that was a tip ball. Just the focus that he had to
focus.
Still catch that was great. And that's Jonnu being Jonnu, man. This is a different Jonnu that you guys seen, you know? So this is the new and improved Jonnu.
Pause all the way up, dude.
Hey, I got to tell you, there are times on the field when he catches the ball and he runs with it that he looked like the best athlete on the field. Right? Yeah. Like, at that size, he looks like he's going through the secondary like, I'm the guy. And that's a good thing to have, because here's what happens. As you go into these next weeks, now you're going to have to pay some attention to Jonnu Smith. And anytime you pay attention to somebody on these short intermediate routes, it opens up the deeper stuff. So, you know, it's kind of something that you wish could have played out sooner in the season, because it would give you more flexibility and more ability to do some of the other things that you really want to do, and that's the explosives.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, what he's doing and what they're doing with him, I mean, he can be he you know who he reminds me of? He is a big Deebo Samuel. The way they use him, he's run reverses. He's been in the backfield. He's been on line of scrimmage. He's been outside. They move him around and use him as that piece. They just haven't used him as much.
Courtney goes, we will lose to Houston, the 49ers. It's like the person in Major League sitting in the bleachers. Oh, they're going to blow it. No, oh, they'll blow it in the ninth.
Wild thing.
Here was Tua on if he chastised Tyreek Hill.
I'm not going to say, you know, I'm yes. Not a big hoorah, like I got on this guy, I got on that guy. Nah, this is football. Like, we're all grown men. Like, if you know, I tell you, you just need to be there. If he tells me, like, I need to throw it somewhere, like, he got the respect from me, I got the respect from him. Like, that's how the communication, I think, works and how it should work. You know, in a professional level, in a professional setting, and especially when, you know, the game's on the line. Like, you got to be where you need to be, and we got to go do it. That's it.
Did somebody say hoorah? I heard Aaron Rodgers was hoorah on that ayahuasca. And I said, no more of that. Not round Zach Sealer's town. I mean, Zach Sealer is just, he's not for hoorah. Could you imagine, like, if you were causing too much noise and you were Zach Sealer was your neighbor? Hey, I need you to keep it down. I'm going to need you to keep it down forever.
No, first he goes, hi the neighbor. He say, I'm going to need you to keep that dead noise down. Otherwise, there'll be trouble.
Mowing hours were 4 hours ago. Right now, sleeping time. No way Zach Sealer has
it. You know Zach Sealer has a riding tractor.
Oh, yeah, dude.
He probably only got a 10x10 spot. He pulled out the tractor.
He's just, remember Chris Weidman, how into his hardware, his lawn hardware Chris Weidman was? That's exactly what Zach Sealer is. The latest and greatest. Even got a silencer for quiet mowing.
Josh Hart says, Sealer looks like he was walking around with a Bud Light post game.
Oh man,
tough, manly.
Say, Sealer has a knife and pliers on his belt at all times.
Oh, he's got a utility belt for sure. For sure, dude. That's great.
So yeah, it was a good win.
Was Aaron Rodgers with the season? Was he accountable or was he weird? Do we know? Like,
I think he said that the moisture in the air and the aliens at Bayside really distracted him. I think, if I'm not mistaken, or something about Art Basel.
Art Basel.
That was good timing.
Aaron, your season's over. What do you got to say? I'm going to Art Basel.
I'm going to Art Basel. That was a great week for us to schedule him in Miami. Art Basel weekend, a total distraction.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Take a break. More to come here on the show. Back after this.
Let me ask you this, Gelby. Since returning from his concussion in week 8, Tua, is first in the league in passing yards, first in the league in completion percentage, second in passer rating, fourth in passing TDs.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say unequivocally, because we had a conversation yesterday about should Tua get MVP votes?
Oh, stop.
No, I'm Adam Beasley wrote a column today in Pro Football
MVP
Network.
Votes?
Yes. Yeah. Name a player. This team is a playoff caliber team with
Josh
him.
Allen.
No. I'm with you. Name a player who's more important to their team's success. Is literally the linchpin between them being the worst team in the league and a playoff team.
Josh Allen.
Maybe. Mitchell Trubisky's his backup. I don't think they fall off.
Trubisky? He sucks.
I mean, the guy was an NFL starter. Like, stop. He's not going to fall. Buffalo would not fall off the way the Dolphins fell off under Skylar Thompson.
100% they would. Josh, no, is, they would not. Josh is the offense.
Well, here's the question.
He had 6 touchdowns last week.
Can you say unequivocally, and I'm not arguing with you, Josh Allen is the MVP. Can you say unequivocally, though, that Tua is an excellent NFL quarterback and with the right team around him could lead a team to a Super Bowl?
Tua is a good quarterback. Tua at times, I know the stats will say he's a top 5 quarterback. I think times you may say he's a top 10 quarterback in the league.
Well, why do we ignore the stats with him?
No, Belichick said it once. I know we're talking about stats are for losers. Like, how about this? Guy talked so much smack going into Green Bay. How'd the Dolphins do in Green Bay? You know, can he win?
He did great. He did great.
The whole team got off to a slow start, though.
Okay, but Tua was great. Statistically, look at what he put up.
Because they got into it towards the end of the game.
You get your stats when you get your stats.
How many times do I have to come on this show? And this is what I say. He's their most valuable player. He is a good quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. I just don't look at him like he's a top 5 quarterback in the league where I feel confident.
I feel confident why
that
everyone
he's
going
to win 4 games to win a Super Bowl.
Statistically, he's better than half the quarterbacks that you would probably place ahead of him.
All right, just do this right now. Would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Tua Tagovailoa?
Mahomes.
Would you rather have Josh Allen or Tua Tagovailoa?
Josh Allen.
Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa?
Tua.
Really?
We had this conversation yesterday. So Solana asked us the question yesterday, and this is a great question.
Send me your edibles that you're on, okay?
Would you rather have Tua and Tyreek or Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase?
Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase without hesitation.
Why without hesitation?
Because Joe Burrow has been in a Super Bowl, and also Ja'Marr Chase is younger than Tyreek Hill. Any response?
Because statistically, Tua is better than Joe Burrow.
Take your stats and Joe Burrow. If you know what, if you're saying because the Dolphins, right, without Tua, right, that's the argument for the MVP. Mm-hmm. Well, the Bengals have been so bad. Joe Burrow's putting up MVP numbers. He
Joe
should
Burrow's
be the MVP because they wouldn't have a
Bengals
win if
have been
it wasn't
bad there. With Joe Burrow.
Yes, because their defense sucks.
So,
look at his
stats. So you're
going to
take
though.
Him? So you'll
look
take him? The guy who's leading the team with a terrible season. Rather than the guy who, when he's playing, is putting up statistically the best numbers in the league.
Joe Burrow, if his defense was just average this year, and I'm someone that said Josh Allen was going to win the MVP in August, Joe Burrow would be the runaway MVP if his defense could just get like Channing Crowder back there and be average.
Boy, isn't that nice to be able to provide context for Joe Burrow? Joe Burrow, whatever he does, it's someone else's fault if it doesn't go well. And with Tua, I don't know. He just can't seem to lead them to the Super Bowl.
You're
talking out of both sides of your mouth.
I have crushed Chris Greer on this show. I said Chris Greer should have been fired 4 years ago. So don't act like all I do is just knock down and tear down Tua Tagovailoa. Your disconnect is you think he is you think he's God. I don't. I just think,
I think
he's a
lot better than most people give him credit for.
Okay, so you think he's great. I think he's very good. Is that big of a difference?
He's top 10. Top 10 hands down. That's the top 5.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Where in the top 10? Where's the earliest you could see him?
2.
8, 9. Like, it's just some dogs out
who's
there
who's
now.
Better?
I just named you four. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow.
No.
Matthew Stafford.
Stafford. Maybe. The guy that just beat them young boys, CJ Stroud.
Maybe. CJ Stroud?
CJ Stroud.
I've been disappointed at him at times. What are we doing here?
Well,
at
least Jordan Love? Is Jordan Love better than Tua?
Hold on. Has CJ Stroud won a playoff game?
Okay, but if that's the determining factor, I'll lose every time. But that, how does that?
Last year, who had better weapons, Tua or CJ Stroud? Who had better
weapons?
No
film on CJ Stroud. Anyone can do anything with no film.
And yes, I'd rather have Jordan Love. I'd rather have Jordan Love, who doesn't have a true number one wide receiver. And
Jordan
Love just
outdueled Tua. I like Tua too. Hawk, you act like saying top 10 is saying this guy should be in overseas somewhere.
I'll tell you why.
10.
No, but I'll tell you why it annoys me. Because you guys so summarily dismiss
that
he's an elite level quarterback. And you're like, okay, I'll give him top 10. But that's like the lowest place that you would put him. Like, you're not doing him a favor by saying, okay, I could see him as top 10. Like, you should see him as a top 5 quarterback.
I'm not paid to do him a favor. That's not me, okay? You know, I'm sure at your kid's little league now, everyone gets a trophy for just showing up and playing. You know, to say great, that takes a lot. All right, I'll make you feel better, though, Hawk. Hey, Channing, I have a quarterback that you'll say Tua is better than. How about Dak Prescott, right? Dak or Tua, which one you'd rather have?
I'm taking Tua all day.
All right, you happy, Hawk? You finally got one.
I guess so. But I don't think it's as easy as you guys say to say, oh, I would take Joe Burrow over Tua. Oh, I would take Jordan Love over Tua. Oh, I would take CJ Stroud over Tua, because you're conveniently ignoring every statistic and you're just saying that playoff win that matters more than anything.
What statistics am I ignoring with Joe Burrow?
I don't know. Whatever I just read to you, if Tua's number one, Burrow can't be ahead of him.
Joe Burrow right now
is number one
category
in passing touchdowns and number one in passing yards this year.
Yeah, we'll do it in a win.
But what is Tua, negative one? So you think, like, come on.
See, Hawk saying since Tua came back from injury, he has the best numbers, but Joe's done it for the whole season.
Yeah. Tua wasn't out there. But if you use playoff wins as a determining factor, why can't we use regular season wins as a determining factor right now during the regular season?
I don't even understand what we're debating here anymore. Like,
I don't.
That's
because I boxed you into a corner. That's why.
No, it's because you just spew nonsense. You should run for office. You'd be great at these debates. President Hockman.
We got to go, Gelb. We love
you. I'm happy you got to go. This was a waste of my time. This was a waste of my time. You know, this is ridiculous.
Well, why? I don't understand what you're doing there.
Go ask Chris Greer. Would you rather have Joe Burrow to a Tagovailoa? Then let me know what he says.
What's most important? Wins,
yes. See, okay. Done. Goodbye.
but Tua's got more wins than Joe Burrow this season.
Sure. He has more wins.
He does. You just said that's most important.
Yes, it is. Just because you have more wins in one season doesn't mean that you're a better quarterback. Look at the entire career. When Tua gets one playoff win,
I bet Tua
then we can start talking about
Burrow. I bet Tua has more wins than Joe Burrow.
Not in the playoffs.
Ooh,
not in the playoffs. Again, no, but I asked you what.
And I don't think you're right on that with what Joe Burrow has done the last 3 years prior to this.
I'm talking about games played, though, seasons.
Sure.
They have to have played the game.
Sure. Go. You know what, Hawk? Get back to me next week on those stats.
Actually, you know what? I think I do have the stat. Hold on.
This is interesting.
Best NFL quarterback win percentage since 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ready?
Mm-hmm. Since
Patrick
2021?
Since 2021.
Okay.
Patrick Mahomes, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Hurts, number two. Josh Allen, three. Lamar Jackson, four. Dak, five. Tua, six. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Did anyone hear Joe Burrow's name there?
Okay. Now let's do playoff wins.
I have the head-to-head. Tua's won 37 games, lost 23. Burrow's won 34 games, lost 30.
The most important factor is wins, and Tua's got him by three.
He's lost 30, so Tua does have a better record percentage-wise as well and more overall wins. However, Joe Burrow has played.
Hey, Solana, who would you rather have?
Gelb, I am viewed as a Tua hater because
are you?
I think the way you think, which is he's a good quarterback. He hasn't
I have a brain.
He hasn't beaten anybody when it matters.
So what's his best career win? Beating the Cowboys?
What's most important? You said wins. Tua has more wins than Joe Burrow.
Yes.
So it's no
wins
longer
in
most
games
important?
That actually matter.
It's no longer most important.
Sure. If that's the one that you want to have, Hawk.
All right. I'm just saying.
You know what?
If you're changing
Len Wiener.
Just let me know in advance.
I'm going to management. Len Wiener. I want a lie detector test on Huck that he would actually prefer Tua Tagovailoa over Joe Burrow.
I would prefer Tua over Joe Burrow all day, every day.
Huck, if you could pass a lie detector test when saying that, I will take you out to Joe Stone Crabs or Carbone next time I'm down in Miami. All right? On my dime.
We'll see you, Gelb.
I'll just bill it to Chit Channing.
Zach Gelb from the Infinity Sports Network. Feel like that's a dub for me.
You are ridiculous.
Giving you fresh stuff with the Miami Dolphins, and we love having them on the show here. Before we get going this morning, Kyle, I got to ask you, there's no way this Bill Belichick going to North Carolina makes absolutely no sense to me. Not only age, I just don't see this guy. There's no draft. You got to go out and recruit, man. The head man got to hit the road and recruit nonstop. I don't see a guy wanting to do that with that 24-year-old girlfriend. Help me out. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think the thing for Bill where this might be appealing is it kind of helps the coaching legacy, and apparently his son would be involved, and then there's some discussion maybe, is he the head coach in waiting? So is he helping the family legacy? So I think maybe
didn't even think of that. Okay, yeah. Good stuff. He's got his kids a coach.
And he's with the University of Washington. So I think maybe there's a couple other variables other than just Bill taking the drop down, because I don't think he's going to have a big market with the pro teams this offseason.
What makes you think that, Kyle? Because I think the same thing, but what is your theory on why you don't think some team like Jacksonville or the Raiders or, you know, New Orleans would be lining up for Bill?
So I think it's a two-pronged issue, and one of the ones that I think is front row and center for this is something that the Dolphins struggle with when they went after the Patriots branch with Brian Flores, and offensive coaching systems and the pipeline of coaches, that Belichick tree, it's so bottlenecked because it's been Josh McDaniels for so long. So how good, if you're going to have a young quarterback that you need to develop with Bill Belichick, how good of a offensive coaching staff do you feel confident in your ability to put together? Because you saw what it looked like at the end of the Belichick era in New England when they had to try to develop their own.
Yeah.
And Josh McDaniels leaves.
Failure on all fronts.
Coaches.
Yeah, massive. Yeah. Bill O'Brien was the only one who had success. And you could say whatever you want about Brian Flores, whether he had success or he didn't. But yeah, it was. But I think a lot of it also has to do with this age and generation of players. They will not relate to the Bill Belichick way.
I don't know, though. He's got a resume. Sometimes they relate to a resume. A resume gets away with more than a guy that's just doing it that's got nothing to back it up, like a first-time guy.
You also presumably have to sell an owner on the idea that you're going to hand over your entire football operation.
That's true.
Yes. Because that's the way he was in New England for forever. And you're going to, what would be the oldest coach in the league, you're going to give over personnel decision-making to on top of the coaching aspect. Like, it's just a hard sell, I think, for the pro side of things.
Yeah. He scares a lot of people with that part. You're right. There are probably a lot of presidents and GMs going, I don't want to work with that guy. We're all losing our jobs here. Hey, Kyle, so I got to get into this one thing here to start with. So everybody knows the running game has been gone. It's now below 60 over the last four or five games per game. A short yardage goal line have not been really good. But the team has pretty much said, hey, listen, we're not so worried about it, man. We got a real efficient, high-percentage short passing game. Tua's putting up record numbers and completions. We'll just keep throwing it. So don't read into whether we get 5 yards on first down passing or throwing. We're treating our passing game like it does everything now. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
Yeah, I think they are who they are. And I think everybody knows what the warts are with the way that the personnel and the roster has been assembled for this year. And at this point, like, Isaiah Wynn's not going to be the savior that's going to come in and fix all the problems because he just got activated the last couple weeks off the pup, right? So I think you have to problem solve as best as you can with what you have at your disposal, and that's the way that they're doing it with the screen game volume and the quick passing game. I will say we had an untimely penalty on Alec Ingold that took another explosive run off the board. Feels like they've had at least one in each one of the last couple of games.
Yeah,
and, you know, it would dramatically change the rushing total if you didn't get dinged for a penalty on these explosive plays. So everybody's just got to tighten up a little bit. But, like, stylistically, I think this is who they're going to be the rest of the year.
But let me ask you this question, Kyle. Give me your reason, after you watch the film, why the outside zone is not working anymore. What is your justification?
I think they're having a hard time getting consistent movement on the front side of the plays, whether that's Kendall Lamb, who I think is a better pass protector than he is a run blocker. So I think from right tackle, I think that is an element that you're missing. I do think the tight end room as a whole blocking is very up and down. That's on the front side. That's on the back side. That Hassan Reddick tackle for loss down in scoring territory. That was Jonnu Smith on a peel back where he's just got to pick off the end man, and he comes up empty handed. And it's like little things like that with that room, they have just not been consistent enough with. It's execution, but it's also I think the loss of what you have with Kendall Lamb, who's doing a great job in pass protection, and I thought he had one of his better games against the Jets. But it's just, he just doesn't have the raw people moving skills. So I think it's a couple prongs here that are all adding up for you.
Let's go to the other side here real quickly here. Patrick Paul takes over left tackle most likely for a while with Teron Armstead and his knee problems. First of all, how did he play in the game? And second of all, going forward, what do you think? Because we are kind of waiting it. He was going to be the next left tackle, and it's now.
I think if he plays like he played against the Jets, the Dolphins are going to be fine. I think there were some ups and downs. I think there were some oversets, some hand placement stuff, a lot of the things you'd expect for a guy who was getting it wasn't even a start, but his third game with any meaningful playing time on offense, and second game where he was in for more than like a dozen plays. So I think the ability that he has with his size, it gives him margin for error to still have success through that, because I think he has made strides from what he put on tape at Houston as far as being consistent with being in the vicinity, and he just has this huge gravitational pull because he's got great grip strength, he's got massive length, he's a big dude. You watch him out there, and you see just how much bigger he is than a lot of the guys in the trenches, and I think he represented himself well. I think the style of play will also boost and help him. I would not be surprised if you still see some oversets, maybe get speed across his face a couple of times, but I agreed with what Mike McDaniel said when he was asked about Patrick Paul. He said, I wasn't calling the game around him. And that's what I saw when I went back and watched it, too.
Hey, got to ask you about Aaron Brewer. We have not talked about him. He had some unbelievable blocks out in front of some of those runs. How well has he played overall this year? Looks like he's having a really good season, and we never talk about the guy.
Yeah, he's a weapon in this offense, and it's kind of the vision that they had with the athletic center, and I think the area where he surprised me the most is how proficient he is in pass protection, and I know it's a quick ball-out offense, but at the same time, anchoring really well, and he's getting in good position. The stuff in space is hang-your-hat type stuff. It's a rarity for offensive lineman to be able to get outside the numbers and get downfield the way that he does. I don't know that he's going to have the name brand recognition to do it, but like I think he deserves legit Pro Bowl consideration because of how good he's been. And he's been consistent the entire season as, at least for me, one of the top two graded offensive linemen effectively every single week. And it's been very impressive the way he's making impact plays and the ways that Miami has these unique designs.
Can we talk about the pass rush? The numbers aren't great. We saw when Aaron Rodgers had time, not only no pass rush, but some guys are getting open. How are the guys all grading out? What'd you see from the pass rush most of that game against the Jets?
Yeah, I think you've got guys on the inside in Sealer and Calais Campbell who are impact players, but it is easier to throw extra attention and pick and choose your spots as far as getting two-on-ones, and Calais is not a big-time volume snap taker. They're very cautious, and you could tell they're deliberate with not overextending him with how much he's on the field. So I think that those elements of being inside and having one of your two guys that they play really well together being on a snap count, there's ways that teams can kind of weather the storm there. And on the edge, it's chop or you're not getting production. And I don't know how close to ready Bradley Chubb's going to be. That is the one where I look at it. I'm like, hey, you at least maybe have something here. If you keep winning a couple games, you can change the dynamic of this part of your team. And I know we just said we didn't think that was going to be the case for Isaiah Wynn on the offensive line, but I do think Bradley Chubb, what his resume is as a pass rusher,
yeah,
even if he only gives you 12, 15 snaps a game and they're third downs, I think it could be a huge change in the dynamic, because right now they're just not getting consistent pressure off the edge with winning pass rush reps.
Let me ask you about the linebacker position, the inside linebackers. Is that, obviously we know Anthony Walker Jr. is battling something right now, battling a hamstring injury, but is that play good enough for you right now to get to 10 wins?
I don't know that my answer is yes. I think you're feeling the limitations of both guys with Dotson and Walker, where I don't think either one of them is super dynamic in space. And when teams are going to spread you out or stretch you out and you're not getting the pass rush, then the middle of the field, you kind of feel like you're compromised a little bit. So I know the last couple of weeks they've dabbled a little bit with some three safety stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a way that you can bridge that gap a little bit to get a little more athletic in some obvious passing situations. But, yeah, I think it is one of the spots on this team that certainly when we get to the offseason we're going to look at and we're going to ask how we can upgrade that second linebacker spot.
Yeah, well, listen, there's going to be a lot of work once we get to that. Are we getting the most out of this? Just had a friend send me something on the defense. Are we getting enough out of the defense there against the Rams? They are really good. Had a great game. Have we lost a little something over the last couple of weeks with the defense, or is this just what they have?
I think you're seeing some of the age with a lot of the guys that you have that are premium players for you. You could tell that they just don't look fast in a lot of spots right now.
Yep.
And it's a tough draw to get Houston with Houston coming out of the bye. And then San Francisco plays on Thursday. So San Francisco is going to have a couple extra days rest on you too for the week after that when they're coming to town. So that'll be the big gut check. There's obviously personnel, like talent issues in some spots, but there's also, I think, guys that, you know, ideally are making a couple more plays for you, and then there's the age factor on defense. So I think as this thing goes, you're really going to have to swim upstream to do what you need to do, I think.
Did you see it? Was Aaron Rodgers just vintage Aaron Rodgers, or do you think that there are secondary issues that we have that have probably the dam is broken?
You had a couple guys fall down on stuff that you'd be surprised to see guys like that fall down on. I know Kendall Fuller fell down on the corner. Jalen Ramsey fell down trying to transition and carry up the sideline early in the second half. I think you could take those and not overreact to them too much, but you know, I generally look at the nickel spot when Kendall Fuller's not been out there, and Kendall Fuller and his long-term viability is a question, and he's obviously been banged up a couple of times this year. But that other outside corner spot opposite Ramsey, that room, I think, is, for me, going to be close to the top of the charts as far as needing to be reassessed, readdressed. You got some expiring contracts, some decisions to make. But, yeah, you kind of tied yourself to Ramsey and Kendall Fuller, who at this point needs to stay healthy, because at least there's a stable presence there with him, where I think once you start interrupting and moving Kader Kohou around, and then you get Storm Duck with his inexperience, those things – Can I think compound the issues that you already have with being looking a step slow, and compound them even more?
Before we let you go, I got to ask you about this Jonnu Smith story. Just incredible, and then what he did in overtime again. But what a weapon! From the way this thing started, the way Mike and Tua loves to throw to him, and Mike is finding ways to get him the ball. What are your thoughts on just how good Jonnu Smith has been?
I think we'll look back in a couple of weeks, and we'll be glad that he signed a 2-year contract and not a 1-year contract. He's been awesome, yeah. And tailor-made for what they like to do. I think the ways that he wins with the ball in his hands is the big differentiator from the other receiving options at tight ends that Miami has had with Mike McDaniel. He still need a traditional Y. I don't think that's Jonnu's game, and with the production that he's putting up with the passing game, it shouldn't be his game, but he's been one of the great success stories from a personnel standpoint this season, and it's a really cool story if you know the path that he's taken to get to Miami as a pro.
Yeah. Boy, it's just a breakout year, man. It has been fantastic. Hey, my man, you are fantastic. Kyle, thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. It was good chatting with you both.
And it is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors, one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, let's go right to him. Adam Beasley from Pro Football Network joins us. Bees, good morning, my man. And here we go down the stretch. Can the Miami Dolphins win five straight without a better running game than they have right now?
No. No, I think they need to do a lot of things better to win five straight. I mean, it was nice that they beat the 27th best team in the National Football League or whatever, but it took a boneheaded coaching decision down the stretch and a pretty much perfect fourth quarter and overtime from Tua Tagovailoa to do that. Competition level goes up big time the next 2 weeks, and I think they're going to need to play better on both sides of the ball to win either of the next two games.
Bees, they've kind of told us, though, because Tua kind of hit us with this a couple of weeks ago, like, hey, don't read into the lack of running game. We got this short passing game rolling. We're completing a high percentage of passes. We're getting guys open. We're doing a lot with this new – I happen to like – I know Omar yesterday's not big on the new passing game. Listen, well, we all love 70-yard plays. Of course we would. But I have no problem with the adjustments the coach has made. Do you?
Yeah, no, definitely. I get it. I mean, they needed to get the ball to Tyreek. They needed to get the ball to Waddle. We've been talking about this for weeks. I think it comes back to what you were talking about before. The inability to run the football is putting so much pressure on the quarterback. And he's met the moment, right? I mean, I wrote about this Sunday. He is a legitimate MVP candidate in my mind. Now, do I think he's going to win? Absolutely not. But since he's been back, he has been the most efficient quarterback in the National Football League. He's probably been the best player in the National Football League. And, yeah, has it come on the backs of some short passes, some screens? Yes, for sure. I consider that good coaching, but it's not like he hasn't made big boy throws. I mean, he has. That touchdown to Jonnu Smith was legit. So I like what they're doing. I like the concept of what they're doing. I just think they need to run the football better. You can't be averaging 3 yards per carry when the weather turns bad. They're going to have two cold weather games. I know they're not against good teams, but they're going to have two cold weather games to end the season, and you're not going to be able to throw the ball 47 times to win those.
Yeah. So what do you think? We hear, well, the tight end blocking wasn't as good, and the fullback's been out and hadn't been there the whole time, and now you're going to be playing with both of your backup tackles most likely, unless you think Teron's going to play this week. But what's been the biggest problem when you look at the seven or eight guys responsible for the run game?
I mean, they're getting their butts kicked. I mean, I
just
think
in general, okay.
Yeah, I think that Green Bay game was the line of scrimmage was 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, right? That didn't help. Curious. I mean, maybe not having Raheem has hurt them at full strength. That has hurt them. I think Achane is best served as a change of pace back, a guy who can catch the football. I don't know if he's a guy that should be touching the ball 20 to 25 times a game. There might be some diminishing returns there. They might not be getting out of Jalen Wright what they wanted, right? I mean, that was a guy that we were all high on 2 months ago. Why isn't Jalen Wright playing more? If there was an opportunity for him to play more, it would be now. The coaches know more than we do, so yeah. That might be factors. I think it's all of the above. Commitment to it, have they really, truly committed to it over the last few weeks, or have they just been like, okay, we're not going to be able to run the ball, we're throwing it? I think those are all factors. I mean, Texans have a really good defense. San Francisco's always stout on defense. Here's what I'm concerned about, Joe. The familiarity between the coaches in the next couple of weeks, I don't know if it's going to work to Mike McDaniel's favor. He and D'Amico Ryans have known each other since 2006. They entered the league together at the same time. Mike as first-year coach and D'Amico as a second-round pick, and they've been close ever since. They know each other so, so well. And if you look historically, Mike's offenses are probably about 10 to 15% worse when he plays guys that he's worked with that know his scheme. So that, to me, is what I'm going to be watching, you know, the matchup between him and D'Amico and obviously him and Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. No, good point. Good point. Hey, by the way, Bradley Chubb back. If he is back, and I just have a gut feeling he is going to be back. Do you feel that way?
This week?
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a playoff game. So I would, if he's close, I think he plays, and he's not going to do the, you know, this is going to hot, you know, freezing cold take me, but I don't think he's going to play 55, 60 snaps, right? I think you'll see him in a targeted package, 25, 30, maybe pass rush situations. I don't know if the edges have been terrible. Like, and even the defensive tackles have done a really good job. They're just missing their run fits, and sometimes they're getting shoved back, and that's, you know, part of the reason they've been giving up some of these big runs. But the pass rush could definitely use it. They're still, I think, bottom five in sacks in the league. I know Chubb Robinson has been playing great, and certainly Zach Steeler, Defensive Player of the Week, you got to love that. But beyond those guys and Calais, you're really not getting anything much consistent in the way of pass rush, and Chubb will help that in a big way.
Yeah, so do you like the way they're using Jalen Ramsey? We're seeing him. It looks like he's getting to do what he really likes. He likes to take the number one receiver. I love that about him. He also likes to mix it up, and he loves to blitz. It's been pretty obvious that he likes that as well. Do you like the way they're using him overall?
Sure. I think, you know, the younger guys have gotten him a little bit. Certainly Garrett Wilson, we saw that was one of the worst games, from a coverage standpoint at least, that we've seen from Jalen Ramsey. But even Marvin Harrison Jr. and Brian Thomas have kind of, you know, they showed the old guys that they can play, right? I'm wondering if that's really the best use of him, Ramsey, is putting him on the number one and saying, you take this guy. Because if it doesn't work, it's yikes. You know, it's you have days like you did last week. What Ramsey's value is being able to blitz from the slot and being physical in the run game. And sure, he can still cover pretty well, but I think he may have lost that just maybe a touch. I think he's 30 years old now. So it's something I'm going to watch closely. You know, Nico Collins, are they going to stick him on Nico Collins this week and say good luck? I don't know after what they saw from him against Garrett Wilson last week if they're going to think that's the best plan.
Yeah, it's because he made, by the way, he made on run support, getting around a big offensive lineman, Poland, got around him and made one of the great plays you'll ever see a secondary guy to make a take a guy right down, dove underneath and went around, and just a really impressive play. So the C.J. Stroud thing, he's been sacked a bunch. He's not having the year he had a year ago. But when he does have time, they can be pretty dangerous. How do you like our matchup, our D-line against their offensive line?
Yeah, it's going to be great to watch. Their interior offensive line is not very good, right? And you think, you know, look at where a lot of the pressure's come from. Certainly they've had issues at tackle, injuries and all that. But teams have been able to get pressure up the middle, and that really seems to disrupt C.J. Stroud. So, you know, everyone's talking about, hey, is this a Pro Bowl year for Zach Steeler? And I certainly think you can make a strong case for him. He can make the closing argument, really, this week. If he goes out and has another multiple sack game, tackles for losses, you know, maybe even gets a strip sack or something, that would help this team in a big way. So, yeah, no, there are deficiencies on both teams. I don't think the Texans are nearly as good on offense as they were last year. We'll see what Joe Mixon can do against them, but I don't think they're nearly as good. But the Dolphins aren't nearly as good on defense as they were last year either, so that'll be a fun matchup.
Hey, so, you know, this is the week we start talking about Laremy Tunsil, left tackle, first-round pick, hell of a player. Nobody's going to argue about him at guard or tackle when he was here. They gave up a lot of picks. We go, man, what do you think of the trade, the 2020 and 2021 first round and also the 2021 second round?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have this nucleus without it, right? The way this team is constructed, you wouldn't have it without it. Certainly it worked out pretty well for Houston because they were able to give up those assets, you know, and they were bad for a while. That helped them to get C.J. Stroud for sure. But they were able to give up those assets and then move on from Deshaun Watson and restart their team. And now it looks like, you know, we'll see what the Colts do. But the Titans and the Jaguars are lost franchises, it feels like. So they set themselves up to be in that 4:30 Saturday wild card game every single year, right? I mean, that's and if you're a Dolphins fan, like, sign me up for that, right? I mean, we'll see how much success they have in the playoffs, but they've entered the conversation. I think it's because they've gotten some real true pros on that team. They've drafted very well, too. Let's not kid ourselves. Will Anderson, very good player. Mitre, a very good player. They've got some talent on that team. But they've also, you know, they've made some savvy moves, I think, in the draft, and I think it's through the trades as well. I don't think there's a loser in that trade because I think they both got what they needed out of it, and the Texans have had a little bit more success.
Yeah, boy, they turned around quickly, didn't they? That's for sure. Hey, real quick.
Quarterback's
important. yeah, that helps. Hey, Jonnu Smith, man, I didn't see this coming. Not only the way he finished the last game. You know, we haven't done much with the tight end position. It's been quiet the last couple years, and we've been talking about a third wide receiver, and all of a sudden we get this guy who does it all.
Yeah, you got to love the fact that he stayed in it mentally. I mean, one target, zero catches for the first 60 minutes of the game, and then in that overtime drive, which I think is one of the more important drives of Tua Tagovailoa's career. I really do, and I know the Jets are a bad opponent and, you know, doing the road, doing the playoffs, do all these, you know, benchmarks that we set for them. I don't know if some are real or some are artificial, but to see him do that, to make the throws he needed to get in field goal range, and certainly shout out to Malik Washington for that return. You know, what a way to get your, you know, get back on track after that muff punt hurt them in Green Bay. But, you know, Tua, on that last drive, was so efficient and did things so well. And you just had a sense that, man, they're going to score a touchdown here because they don't have an answer for this offense right now. That, to me, is things to build on. And, again, all these things come with a caveat. The Jets are a horrendous team. Like, they're so bad. But like, Rodgers played really well. Like, it wasn't like Rodgers played really well.
He did. By far his best game in a Jets uniform. Absolutely.
Totally. It's not like the Jets gave them that game, and the Dolphins had to have it, and I know it was against an inferior opponent, but they got it. You know what they did? They gave themselves another week to prove that they're for real, and this is the week. Like, we always say this is a huge test, and they failed those tests more often than not. I will say this, Joe, they now have a win against a winning team in primetime. Yeah. The Los Angeles Rams has become a quality win because they've come on as late. But, you know, this is going to be – there's so much build-up to games like this. There's going to be so much build-up to next week's game against Shanahan. And Mike, for whatever reason, is kind of freaked out in these games. And the guys have kind of – players have kind of choked in key moments in these games. If this core is what they believe it is, it's got to show up on Sunday.
Absolutely. Perfect weather conditions inside. No, mm-hmm. I agree with you. All right, Adam. Hey, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, enjoy the game.
All right, Adam Beasley, Pro Football Network. We continue on. The big fella just came in, Kim Bocamper. We'll have him with us in just a moment. But first, I do want to tell you about Michael Kotze at Choice Mortgage. So you need to get a mortgage. You need to get qualified. You need to get some equity out of your home. All these things going on in your life, man. You just found a home you really like, and you don't want to have to wait till Monday to get a hold of somebody. Well, I like telling everybody about Michael Kotze at Choice Mortgage. The guy has no life. He's always working. He works 7 days a week. More important, he's been in this market for 35 years, and he's really good at what he does. Whether you're a first-time home buyer, you want to get the lowest rates, you can guarantee even on a Saturday or Sunday, you can get a hold of him and get going. If you're self-employed, you've been declined by the banks, if you're looking for the most popular mortgage we have here in South Florida, the reverse mortgage, because if you and your spouse are 62 or older, you qualify, you got all that equity in your home, and you can really use it, still have a place to live, man, that reverse mortgage might be absolutely perfect for you. There's a reason so many people are going to it. Google reviews on the web, Choice Mortgage reviews, and find out what people are saying about Michael Kotze. That dude works 7 days a week. Call or text him, 561-441-2730. That's 561-441-2730. MLS 166-254. Rates and terms subject to change daily without notice. He's an Equal Housing Lender.
It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Hundreds of Toyotas indoors, one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
We don't get to do this very often, Bo, but this is a good one. Mark Vandermeer, Texans radio voice, formerly with the University of Miami. And I got to tell you, he wasn't here a long time, but he sure picked a couple of good years to be down here with that team. Good morning, Mark. How you doing, brother?
Good morning, guys. I'm with a couple of legends. Let's have a reunion. Let's go.
Well, hey, look, every time I hear your name, all I think of is rock and roll, whatever it is.
Yeah, let's rock and roll.
This, rock and roll that, but it's ingrained into my mind.
Well, I can't say it's caught on here, but it's caught on here, okay?
No, I've heard
people
that.
People do say that to me. And, you know, when I got the job here with the Texans, I said, you guys mind if I say that? Because if they didn't like it, I wouldn't have kept it. but they wanted it. And I started it before Miami anyway. I did it at UMass and Central Michigan. So it's kind of my thing. I don't say it all the time, but I say it some of the time.
Hey, Mark, I want to start with one of my favorite UM players, Andre Johnson, and being able to go to from UM where you got to call his games and get to know him, and then he becomes, when you go to the Texans, he becomes their first-round pick. How cool is that to be with him and now see him as a Hall of Famer, the first one in Texans history?
I can't say enough about him, Joe. You guys know him. He's a phenomenal human. He's made Houston his home. He was the best thing to watch for the Houston Texans for so long. And for him to get into Canton, and I was there, you know, we broadcasted the game. I was at the ceremony. I'd never been to a Hall of Fame ceremony. We were in the very first Hall of Fame game as a franchise. But Andre did a phenomenal job speaking, saw so many of the old guys, saw Frank Gore, et cetera. I think I ran into Don Solinger there. I mean, it was amazing to see who showed up. And I think what it did was it brought all the former Texans into Canton with him. He shared that honor with all his former teammates during a time in this history, this franchise's history, where they really weren't doing much winning. But you know what? They could all share in this, and it was very special.
Hey, you've been there with that franchise since its inception, and how have you seen it grow just from a standpoint of, you know, the fan, you know, the fan, the way the fans feel about the team, and now it's been there for such a long time, just watching this team mature into that city, and it's always been a football city with the Oilers prior to that, and it continues to be that way.
Well, the first decade was kind of rough because they took a while to get to 500. Then, they had their first winning season in 2009, playoffs in 2011. But since they won the division for the first time in 2011, yeah, they've had some down years since then, but nobody else has won the AFC South more. Now, look, that's not the ultimate goal, but they've really dominated the division since 2011 overall. Yet, they're the only team in the division to not make it to an AFC championship game. And look, you're in Miami, Dolphins have all the history, Super Bowls, et cetera. Here in Houston, the farthest any team has gotten is the AFC championship game, and the last time was 1979 when the Oilers lost to Pittsburgh, and they lost back-to-back. So this is a big mission here. Get that far, get beyond it, but at least get that far for starters.
All right, let's talk about C.J. Stroud. Boy, last year I saw him, and you know, people are saying he's already acting like a top five to top 10 quarterback, 23 touchdowns, five picks. This year the numbers aren't as good. I know Brian Baldinger just came on and said he's playing just as well, but the O-line has had some problems. What's been your take on C.J. Stroud's play so far?
I think Baldy is right. They've had some issues up front. It's been a little leaky. They've had times where, I'm telling you, he goes back to pass and there's a guy in his lap. You know, it's really difficult with all the negative plays that they've suffered through to get him comfortable, right? And he's made some incredible throws this year, not as many as last year. People are just overwhelming the line of scrimmage. And I know they have players up front, and they've been playing a little bit better lately. But, you know, they had a bad game against Tennessee a few weeks ago. That was their latest loss. They beat Jacksonville. They finally got going in the second half. They've had some really dry second halves of games in this middle part of the season, middle to late. So they hope to get things right. It's going to be tough against the Dolphins. Where they're vulnerable is up the middle. They haven't been able to figure out how to really solidify the middle of the line. So teams with stud defensive tackles, and, you know, here we come with Calais Campbell, with Siler, teams with really good players in the middle, in the interior, give them problems, and they're trying to take care of that.
Well, we got to talk about a guy that's going to be tied to both of us for a long, long time, Laremy Tunsil, who gave up a lot of draft picks and so you could get him. How good has he been at left tackle? How's he playing?
Well, I think with Laremy, look, for a while he had the false start bug biting him quite a bit. And, you know, it's become a thing in Houston. Now he's cleaned it up in recent weeks, which is really good. But it was epidemic stuff. I mean, every game, a false start. It's almost to the point where I feel like if we get to the Super Bowl, I'll be like, let's get it out of the way early. The Laremy false start. Let's do it in the first quarter so it doesn't bite us later. And you know he's an elite pass protector. The evidence is there. You put on the film and you can see it, but that plagues him from time to time. And then it was spreading around. It was contagious on the rest of the line. They went to Minnesota. They had some awful possessions at Minnesota where they had all this pre-snap stuff. Now, they've cleaned a lot of it up as the season has gone on. I like in this season, the hope is this, that they had a hot start 5-1. They had a clunky middle, but some good moments, and they've maintained a winning record, 2-game lead in the division and the tiebreaker, and now we got the stretch run. It's incredibly tough, the schedule they're about to embark on. They got 3 games in 11 days starting on Sunday, but I think they can be playing their best football right now. They're not totally healthy, but they're healthy at a lot of key spots, so that should help.
Mark, you guys are putting up some stupid numbers defensively with sacks and takeaways, especially the interceptions. My God, the whole secondary has just loaded it down. How good is the defense what you thought it would be? Or, I mean, I know it's fifth overall, but what's been your thoughts on their play?
All right, so they're really good at causing negative plays. TFL, sacks, they're really good at that. They take the ball away. They do give up some big plays. That's why this is, to me, not a good matchup for them, because they've been vulnerable with some long-distance scoring plays. They are sixth in the league in surrendering plays of 30 yards or more. Yet, they're fifth in the league in yardage. So, go figure. A, every once in a while, somebody hits a big play on them, and obviously that every once in a while can really hurt you. So, I like the way they play. Their mentality is swarm. They want to swarm around the ball. They are all in the image of the head coach, DeMeco Ryans. Now, they don't have Aziz Alshire, obviously, for the next 3 games. Jalen Petrie's out, and he's been playing really good at that nickel spot, kind of an extra linebacker from time to time. He might be out for the season. There was a report last night that he's out for the season, so we'll see. They do have a lot of good players, though. I mean, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, they are monsters coming off the edge. In the interior, they've been pretty good. Linebackers are still pretty good and deep, despite Aziz not being out there. And, you know, Jimmy Ward, Derek Stingley Jr. in the secondary at corner is one of the best in the league, if not the best right now. Jimmy Ward can still play, and he's ferocious. I mean, they've got a lot of guys, so they can affect things, but it's going to be tough this weekend against this Miami offense.
You know, you two of those guys you talked about combined 20 sacks between them, and it's certainly something that the two in that offensive line from the Dolphins are going to have to be aware of getting into that game.
Yeah, Will Anderson Jr. has been wonderful. Now, he's not always healthy, but he'll go out there with a dangling appendage, you know. And Danielle Hunter, we always knew in Minnesota, you know, you see the numbers, but Minnesota's not exactly on TV as much as the Dallas Cowboys or something. But, man, to watch Danielle Hunter every game, my goodness, he does things. And, look, we've had some pass rushers here. We had Mario Williams and Jadeveon Clowney. We've had some good guys. J.J. Watt, oh, I forgot to mention him. Danielle Hunter is elite at getting after the quarterback, running back, whoever's in the backfield, he's going to eat you up. So great to have those guys on this squad.
Joe Mixon, we haven't talked about him. We got so caught up in the passing game. But I saw a couple weeks ago you guys were struggling a little bit, and they just started handing off at the end of the game, and Joe Mixon started, looked like, running a lot to the left side, having some success. How important is it to this offense to keep Joe Mixon, who's getting close to 1,000 yards on the season?
You know, he's the best back they've had here since Arian Foster. And when I met with him, when they signed him, I really took a liking to him. You know, I didn't realize, you know, three-year captain at Cincinnati. I mean, this is Joe Mixon we're talking about, a guy who has a lot of pelts in this league as a running back. So the big buzz in the offseason was, where's Derrick Henry going? Where's Saquon Barkley going? And I think the Texans were in on Barkley, but they got Mixon, and he's third in the league in yards per game. He's behind those two other guys I just mentioned. And he hasn't been totally healthy, but he's an eraser. He can erase some problems for you. And very physical. He's a team captain. I think right now I'd have to call him the MVP of this team. He's that important to what they do. They've got to have him out there. And I think they need to throw the ball to him more. He can catch a lot of balls, but they got a lot of guys to throw to here with Nico Collins, Tank Dell, et cetera, Dalton Schultz. But they got to throw the ball to Mixon. He can do great things with it.
Mark, it's great having you, man. Really appreciate it. And this was so good. I think we're going to run you early in the morning. We're going to tell everybody you're joining us early in the morning tomorrow.
Let's go. And where are my Canes questions? No Canes questions, huh?
We're going to go ahead. You know, we're going to Orlando. What's the name of the bowl again?
Pop-Tart Bowl.
Pop-Tarts Bowl, yeah.
Hey,
I like the cherry Pop-Tarts, by the way. Just saying.
Yeah. That's the hot social media viral bowl, okay? That's the bowl you want to go to if you're not going to the playoffs, so no problem there. it's too bad what happened, but you know what? I love watching Cam play, and I just think that they're going in the right direction. But, you know, in college football now, it's like you got to build the castle all over again every year, right?
Every,
so let's see how they do.
Every year. A little rock and roll before you go. Can you give me a little one? Not scream and yell, but just a little one.
Go Canes. Rock and roll.
All right, there you go. Mark, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right.